Welcome to another episode of Grow Nation Podcast. I'm your host Navjot, and on this podcast, we talk to successful entrepreneurs who have made it big. We go deeper into understanding their stories, where they come from, what makes them different. Were they born with a special talent, or their circumstances made them who they are today? In today's podcast, we have a very special guest, Arman Anand, also known as Armani.
Came to Canada as an immigrant, a proud immigrant, Punjabi.
Is not an average real estate professional. A dropout from two different universities, he started in the real estate field almost a decade ago and never looked back.
If you tell me I can't do something, I'm gonna figure out a way to prove it.
He comes from a family of doctors, but he was wired differently, and in the eyes of his family, he was a failure. But he loved sales, and in the first month of selling vacuum cleaners, he made $30,000.
And they're like, no, it's sustainable. You might make a lot of money. Drug dealer makes a lot of money too.
And a few years later, he was able to retire his parents in a $3.5 million house, all bought in cash.
They attended the award ceremony and they were all in tears. My family was there and I went on the award, got the best award in the brokerage at the time. And now my dad even does real estate.
Beyond his real estate investing career, he's also a TikTok star. And if you already follow him on socials, you know that he loves his cars. He's proven that not all paths to success look alike. And sometimes it's the most unconventional routes that lead us to the path of success. Without further ado, I present to you Arman Anand. All right, Arman. First, I want to talk about what do I need to know about you from your past that made you who you are today?
The past obviously helped me become who I am today. So it was a big part of, you know, the experiences that I've been through. I came to Canada as an immigrant, a proud immigrant, Punjabi, mm-hmm. born and raised in Amritsar. And when I came here to this country, you know, I've been through all the hardships with my parents, seeing them work three jobs, four jobs, and did odd jobs myself in the start. Mm. You know, worked as a baker at Tim Hortons, not for too long, because I started mm-hmm. eating all the Timbits. I shared the story all the time. Did that. And then, I soon realized that, there was a disconnect between in our society, between money and how we view money and how we make money. Mm. And everyone's chasing this financial dream for their stability, for their parents, for themselves, for their families, especially as us as immigrants, we're coming here for a better life. So, a whole part of my life, a good majority of it, was spent trying to break the code, break the system, to try to figure out how can we find financial stability for generations to come, so my future generations don't have to go through what my parents went through for us. And I wanted to give them a better life. I wanted to give myself a chance for a better life while I'm living, because I only have one. You only have one. And then same thing for the rest of the generations to come beyond me. So
what's that? What's that one moment, while you were figuring this out and not too long ago, right? So you were figuring this out. How old were you when you were going through this?
This was my first job. I'm 16 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's about what, 10, 12, 13 years ago?
Yeah.
So what was that one moment where you thought that, okay, sales is for me? Like how did you, because a lot of people don't figure that out.
Yeah, it's true. It's that happened for me. See, I don't have anybody in my family that did business other than one person in my life. And that person lived far away because I lived in Toronto. He lived in, that's my uncle that I'm talking about, and he lived in America. But sales was sparked when I made the connection that I can sell something and make more money, or I can do something in terms of sales with my own abilities rather than trading time for money. And because trying for money didn't make sense, because I had a passion for cars since I was 16, right? I came to Canada. I'm just a big car fanatic. Bought a crazy car, CL500 Mercedes that time, like an older car. It was cheap because they depreciate so much. But brand new, that car was 180 grand. I bought it for $12,000.
Wow.
But nobody bought that car because the service that car cost more than $12,000 a year. So I'm paying 100% of the value back into the vehicle. And I remember just buying that car, I had to pay for gas. Because I was like, I have to figure this out. So 18 was when I would say I really wanted to buy that car. I saved up money from 16. Trying to save money for that car from 16 to 18 really showed me that, look, I have to wait 2 years to buy and save up 12 grand. It doesn't make any sense, because that time the salary was like $6 an hour, $7 an hour, something very minimal, right? So I have to keep working X amount of hours to save this much money. It was simple math. So I have to just keep trading time for money.
Mm.
That did not make sense to me. And I was like, I'm never going to get ahead. And same thing with my parents, right? They're doctors. They come here, they're doing odd jobs in their first year until they're getting their licensing again. So they came here, all their certifications are gone. through the window. So, you know, a wealthy family back home is not wealthy anymore. We're middle class. Mm. So that was, you know, seeing my parents do three jobs, putting two sisters to school, and they're trading their time for money. And they're not figuring it out now. They're like, we figured everything out in India, but in Canada, I can't figure the system out. So that really woke me up. And I was like, something has to change. I have to be the change. I have to make sure that if I'm not changing for the better and doing something different, we're going to be stuck in this loophole over and over and over again.
And like I said, we just have one life.
We have one life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And people take it for granted, right? It's just like the kids that grow up, right? When you were younger, when I'm younger, we all have this dream, right? We want to be this. I wanted to be a chef when I was growing up. Like when I was like 5 years old, 6 years old, like I loved eating. I love food. And I was like, I want to be a chef. And I'm like, you know, I want to be a pilot. Those things change over time. The narration changes. But as we get older, we become more realistic with our goals. And that's something that has to change. And we all often have to remind ourselves that the kid inside of us still should be alive and should be dreaming about the things that you thought about then. Because when you're a kid, you don't care about anything else. You just think everything's possible.
Mm.
And that's the biggest strength a child has, right? When we're older, we become too realistic. And, oye, nahi hoga, this can be done.
Mm.
This is possible. This is not possible. You start creating those boundaries for yourself. So,
like, in your view, why do we create those boundaries?
I think it's because people get comfortable and a part of accepting the reality as they grow up. So if you're stuck in the system, you just accept your fate. And once you give up on yourself, that's where everything changes for you, because you don't have any more personal growth at that time. And a lot of people that are stuck in 9-to-5s, salary is a drug. I always say it. It's the biggest drug in this world that they give us to forget about our dreams. So if you're forgetting about your dreams and they're giving you this paycheck every single 2 weeks, you become okay with it. You're like, yeah, 2 weeks, it's coming back into my account. 2 weeks, it's coming back into my account. Mm-hmm. But you're not really chasing anything more than that. You are capped at what you're making by someone else making the decision for you, for your life. You can only take 2 weeks off your vacation. 2 weeks, if you tell me I can only vacation for 2 weeks in my life, I think that's suicide. Like, that's, it's crazy. How can someone live like this? It just doesn't add up in my mind. And that's where the disconnect, you know. What salaries
are coming from, you know, I come from a service family as well. So coming from a service family, you know, you came from, you know, your parents were doctors, trading time for money. So you spoke about your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So how important a role does he play in your life? Or
significant. Probably my biggest role model growing up, just because, you know, a big part of why I moved to Windsor, because I used to live in Toronto. I moved to Windsor now just to be closer to him so I can see him more as well. And, you know, growing up, he was the coolest figure in my entire life, because he was this guy that very macho, handsome, you know, this strong dude. But not only that, he had his whole life put together really well as a package. He could travel wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted. He had flexibility and freedom to come to Toronto to come visit me. And, you know, he took care, you know, whenever we came to Canada, he was the only family that we had in Canada. All of our families in America, he used to come to Toronto all the time, unannounced, probably like once every 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And for someone to have that type of freedom, you wonder, like, they must be stable. They must be financially strong, right? Because they can pick up and go whenever they want, wherever they want. And that's the type of freedom and flexibility I wanted. And looking at him, you know, he used to be a business owner and the only business owner in our family. All my family generations is just doctors. Mm. Like, all my mom's side is all doctors in America. And they're all, you know, successful, all highly successful, but in their own ways, right? They're still limited in terms of other things lifestyle-wise. So high income jobs, but a lot of studying, a lot of debt, and a lot of process. So he skipped that entire process. He knows the coolest people. You know, he knows people from the NFL. He knows people from the NBA. He knows the mayor. He knows President Obama. He used to send him cards to his house for Christmas. You know, sing, have a Merry Christmas to you and your family. And that was just like, wow, like, he's larger than life. Right? He's larger than life, mm-hmm. right? And
it's possible, you know. All our life, we have been told, you know, this is not possible. You can't shake hands with Obama.
Yeah.
It's possible, you know. Suddenly you realize it was.
And that too, he was an immigrant in America when he came, 17, 18, like when I came. So, you know.
And that was a tough time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's not a lot of Indians. And, you know, being an Indian at that time, like, we were looked at as terrorists, right? And they're like, oh. There was no differentiation, right? And then remember when 9/11 happened, he was going through the hardest time because people were discriminating against that. But, you know, it's sad times, but you build resilience, you build stronger character, and he was a big role model in my life, and he used to tell me, get into real estate, start investing, and get into business for yourself. That's where your life will change. You want this life, you have to do something different. You have to learn different values. You have to think a different way. And once I shifted that mindset and tried to adapt his mindset, things changed.
So you bought a Maserati when you were 25.
Yeah.
25, right?
Not 20, 25, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Not a lot of people do that. Like, and I kind of know that you regretted it when you bought it. But yeah. Talk me through, you know, what happened. Because I know you are massive on cars and, you know,
I just got a big check. I remember it was like, I got a big check from like my sales commissions that I've been saving for the last couple of months. This is at that time, it was probably the most amount of money I've made, right? And it was like $100,000 check, right? And like, because I'm in pre-construction, so we don't get paid every like 3 months, like in resale. In pre-construction, you get paid once every couple of years, right? And we get paid big time and whenever the checks come. So I got $100,000 check, things are going great. I'm like, I look at the bank balance. I'm like, okay. I look at this car. I saw it online. I'm like, man, this is like a dream. I love Maseratis, and especially that car because it's a Ferrari's brand, right? And that was like a stepping stone to me buying the Ferrari. And when I bought that car, it showed me that it's possible. And it was just like, you know, look, it was just a thing that I had to prove to people at the time because I wasn't really that mature that way. It was more so like, you know, I needed this to flex. I needed this to show to people that I can do it. And I could do it. But that was all the money I had. So it wasn't the greatest financial decision, which I regretted later on because I could have done a lot of things with that money at that time because real estate was very cheap still. And if I had the mindset that I had now, I could have bought 30 of those, right? But you put everything into that car. I bought that car, bought it cash. First thing I did with that car is I took my first cousin, Pavel, and I drove it to my uncle's house.
Oh, wow.
Because I wanted his validation.
And what was his reaction to it?
Right when I showed up to his house, I took it the same day I took it from the dealership. It's that moment I drove to Toledo from Toronto, 3.5 hours away. And when I went to his house, I pulled up in his driveway and I'm like, I have something outside. Go let me come outside. He comes outside. He's like, you idiot. He looked at me and it's a complete opposite reaction of what I'm thinking, right? I'm thinking he's gonna be so proud of me. Like I'm 25, I bought a Maserati. And I'm like, he's like, you idiot. He's like, what did you do? And I'm like, what do you mean? That's just a sick ass car, right? Like, aren't you proud of me? He's like, I'm proud of you, but you're the stupidest guy I've ever met. He's like, you didn't learn nothing that I taught you, right? He's like, take this money. How much did you buy this for? Did you finance this? I'm like, no, I paid it cash. He's like, you know, you're even more dumber than I thought. He's like, you pay this cash? He's like, you finance these vehicles, use the rest of the money, invest it, and make the investment pay for this car. And that was like, okay, shit. I didn't figure this out yet. You know, I'm just playing.
You got $100,000 check, but there was still a lot of growing up, right?
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's the growth that you have to go through. And I learned through that process. Like, and if I did not do that at the time, I would not understand the car industry. And I learned a lot about the car industry from that point on. And a lot about myself. Because I was like, oh, this car is great, but it was a dumb decision. And I have to delay my gratification. I shouldn't be buying this now. It's not something that I need right now. I should build a better portfolio. And that's when the switch happened. Right after I started killing it in sales even more, started getting crazy amount of checks coming in from the real estate business, from sales. Then I started investing that money. That's when I saw compounding happen like crazy. And I was like, whoa, mind blown. I'm like, poof. Whatever I'm making here, I'm putting here, I'm doubling it, tripling it that fast. Keep doing that. And that became addictive. And then I learned that way. And I started buying multifamily. And then now I can go buy any car I want, but I'm still like hesitant. Like, okay, should I do it? Should I not do it? But the thought still comes to your mind because you're like, you know, the kid inside you wants that car.
Yeah.
Right?
Makes sense. So do you think that, I think show off, there's a thin line. Yeah. Between, you know, like dreams and show off, right? So I think a lot of show off is misplaced because people are trying to show other people. But do you think looking rich is important?
I think looking rich is not as important because if you're really wealthy, you don't really care about how you look. But being presentable is very important, especially in the business that I'm in, business that you're in. And it's just, if you're a nicer looking person and if you take care of yourself, you get put in different rooms and different situations that other people will not normally have the opportunity to be in. So I think a lot of people use cars, vehicles, and things in a different way, which doesn't really help their image because they use it as like, if let's just say like the car that I bought, the Ferrari. If I just kept on talking about, look, I bought this Ferrari, I'm better than you. That is, you're not really using it to give any value back. I bought that car because I really wanted it and I could do it now, right? And it was a statement for myself to say, look, okay, I've done okay in my life. This is something I deserve, and I want to do this. I'm in suits all the time. The reason why I'm in suits is because I feel like it makes me feel confident about who I am. You know, I like looking presentable. So if I'm ever going into a meeting, like I go to LA a lot, if I did not look the way I did when I went to LA, when I was fully dressed up, I would have not gotten into the rooms and met some of the celebrities that became friends later on in my life. And that's something that was a big thing for me, because if I walked into the room, I'm not a celebrity by any means. But when I walked into those rooms, people treated me and respected me as like, okay, this guy must be a movie actor or something from India. So I got into so many like Grammys. I got into so many.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. There's so many stories from that. Like I met Michael B. Jordan. I met LeBron James. I met Rich Paul, his agent, and all because I was just in a three-piece suit. And I was just walking by and I saw this thing happening. I'm like, what's this? Let's go in here. And they didn't even ask me that. Everybody else were like, are you on the guest list? For me, they're like, yeah, come on in, sir. Because you look like you belong. Mm. So.
And were you still intimidated?
No.
No?
Because once you're in, if you feel good about yourself and you genuinely know who you are, you're not going to be intimidated by anything. Because you're so confident in who you are as a person that you cannot be shaken by anything, right? You're comfortable in your own skin, and I think that's the most important thing, because the best dress that you have to wear every single day is yourself in your own skin. And once you put that on, you know, you're not faking to be someone else that you're not. You're just you.
But how do you get that? Like, I see a lot of people, you know, who get old, get retired, and still don't get that. Like, is there a magic pill where you can actually, you know, like be comfortable with in your own skin? Like, how did you figure that out?
I think once you stop looking at pleasing other people, that's when it all stops, right? And you have to look at yourself in the mirror every day and high five yourself in the morning and say, look, you know, you're going to be great today. You're going to do well today. And you're going to make sure when you sleep tonight, you made the world a better place than you were when you woke up. So every single day you have to have this mission. I look at myself in the mirror every day. It's like a little personal routine that I'm just kind of sharing with you. But you have to stop trying to live according to what other people want you to live like. You have to live for yourself. At the end of the day, like this is your life. And we only have one of it. So you have to make sure that you're doing everything that's on your bucket list, on your checklist. I don't have time to care about what other people think of me or what they perceive me as, or, you know, what they want me to do in my life. Those are all comments. That's all gibberish and garbage. Listen to it from one ear, take it out the other. That's it. You know exactly who you are. You know exactly what you like. Stand by exactly what you mean, right? And if you have something that you feel strongly towards, stand by those things. That's what makes you a man, right? Like, just be yourself and be confident in your ability to believe in those things. And once you have that, that's the most powerful force in the world. So
nice. Let's go back a little.
Sure.
So your parents are doctors.
Yeah.
And your sisters are doctors.
Yeah.
So how difficult was it for you to say, oh, I'm a sales guy?
Probably the worst thing you can ever tell your parents, right? Especially coming from an Indian background. You know, I'm Punjabi. And growing up, there's a certain expectation of what they expect out of you, right? And that's something that a lot of people in India face and in our culture. And it's something that it doesn't get talked about a lot. So I'm glad that you brought it up, because culturally growing up, we have the best support system, best belief system that we can possibly, we're so blessed in so many ways. But one of the things that I really wished in the Indian community could change was letting the kids be who they want to be and letting them chase their passions for who they are, and not forcing the careers down their throat in terms of what you think is good for them. Because that's something that happened for me. That's something that happened for my oldest sister. So she became a doctor and then she left it. So right after she finished, she left medicine because she did it for my parents' dreams. That was not her dream, right? They forced her to do it. She did it. She was the oldest child, so she didn't have an option. I'm the youngest, so I was the rebellious one, right? And growing up, it was, I had a very clear path. That clear path was I'm going to be a dentist, and that's something that I was going to, you know, look towards doing. But when I started looking at the finances growing up, like just the family condition of where we were, it would have put us down under, you know? My parents could have done it, but at what sacrifice? And that didn't make sense to me. And I was not really interested in looking at people's teeth all day. That's not something that really, it didn't really interest me. The salary was nice, right?
Mm.
But then again, it's a salary. Mm. I did not want that lifestyle. And, you know, growing up, my mom's a dentist. So this is something she's like, you know, dentist to banni jayega. You know, like that was like the minimum. Like,
that's the least amount of doctor.
Exactly. Right? Then, yeah, literally. Like, dentist to banni jayega. Then from dentist, they went to, okay, let's be more realistic. And she's like, a lawyer.
Okay.
Right. Then a little bit transition. She's like, you know, I'll accept a lawyer. It was like, my parents were like, you know, this is like the lowest we're going to go. And then from law, then it slowly went to, okay, fine. We'll open the engineering route because they saw me in, you know, university and they're like, this guy doesn't have any passion towards medical stuff. I was only excelling in math and business classes. And that was something that I interested
in. Makes so much
sense now. It was something that I interested in. So wherever I had interest, I paid attention. I did the work. I enjoyed it. If I didn't like that course, I wouldn't even go to the classes. I was like, this is a waste of my time. So, you know, doctor, lawyer, failure. I came in the failure route. In the first better half of my life, until then, now you have to redesign the whole system and reprove everything to your parents because they come from a traditional mentality of, you know, educated. This is what we expect. There's a class associated with becoming doctors. I understand. That's the case, right? If you tell someone you're a realtor, or you're a mortgage agent. Like, sorry, what? Like they look at you as like there's a notion perceived with their careers that's not positive. That's not held at the
sales,
same.
And that's sales, right? Like, it's not just about, you know, like that. It's about sales.
Yeah.
And I always tell people that, you know, like even engineers, let's say,
yeah,
the only reason why they are getting a salary is because someone is selling in the company. So it should be a glorified profession. But yeah, you are right. You know, it's just, you know, comes across as something that's dirty, which is, it's not.
Yeah.
So tell me, what was your mom or dad's reaction when you said that, I don't want to do this?
Oh, this happened right after university because there was like a moment in time which just stopped for me. And that's when I was figuring out, you know, what's my next step in life? And this is right after university. I'm trying to figure out, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is something that can make sense, but I have no clue what I should be doing. But I was involved in sales jobs at the time. I was selling vacuums. I was selling phones. I was doing a lot of sales jobs and I was making a lot of money then. And, you know, doing these sales jobs, I was like realizing something. I'm like, you know, I'm really good at sales. And that's when I realized, you know what, this is something I enjoy. I enjoy meeting with people. I enjoy interacting with other people. I enjoy the human connection. That's where I excel. That my parents don't enjoy, my sisters don't enjoy, but that's where my interests lie. And then the money is just a byproduct of that. And I met a lot of cool people, made a lot of cool relationships, which became my clients in real estate later on. So it was just the eye-opening experience for me to say, look, I'm going to do sales. And when I started making a lot of money there, I went back to my parents. I was like, look, this is sustainable. I could do this. And they're like, no, it's sustainable. You might make a lot of money. Drug dealer makes a lot of money too.
Wow.
So that's something that, you know,
was like, that's when you were selling vacuums.
That's when I was selling vacuums.
Talk me through that.
So there's this company, Filter Queen. They were selling medical grade devices to people in Ontario at the time. It was a new company that had different branches. It was like an MLM. Essentially.
Okay.
So you would, you know, let's just say if you're doing really well, my next step would be to open one of my own and then hire other people and teach them how to sell this medical grade device by going door-to-door sales. And I wouldn't have to knock on the doors particularly, but the company would call and book these appointments for you. I would go to their house and I would have to show them how great this vacuum is and how great this air purifying system is because medical grade stuff. It actually is really great till day. I still believe it just because I've seen what it can do. But it's very expensive, like $6,000 each for each thing.
This was how many years ago?
This is a long time. Just like 10 years ago. 13 years ago.
Still a lot of money. But
13 years ago, a lot of money.
Yeah.
And you know, at that time, the appointments that they're setting up are all immigrants and I'm going to their houses and they don't have any money to begin with. But there were some houses that had extreme amount of wealth, right? So entering their homes was another thing that kind of woke me up to say, wow, people live like this. There's guys with indoor pools that have like 20 car garages and you know, they have that type of wealth and the mindset difference between each type of buyer. So I would go to their house, I would show them the vacuum. I would actually clean their beds for them and show them, look, this is what the vacuum can do. Because it was such a strong medical grade device vacuum that we put a filter on and I could actually take all their dead skin right off their bed.
Oh, wow.
And that's the point where it would sell. to every single person. And I sold every single day. And every time I sold one, I made $500 check. And if I sold two in a day, I made $1,000 a day. And I was selling at least $30,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
From the first time I started that business. And that's when I was like, you know, this is crazy. And I'm like a young, fairly young kid. You know, like I'm 19 years old, 18 years old doing this. Right. And I'm like, goddamn. And I did that for about 6 to 8 months. And then they told me, go invite your friends. Cause if you're that good, your friends could do this too. I'm like, all right, yeah. You know, if I can do this, it's so easy. Everybody could do this. I'm no better than you. Let's go bring them. So I brought everybody. I brought actually some people in this office. I brought Amanda. Okay. Amanda came there. She tried to do this. I brought like 10 of my closest friends at the time. We all put them in a room. They try to sell these vacuums over a 30-day period. All 10 of them sold zero. And that's when I realized, okay, maybe this is not just luck. There is something that I enjoy differently or I do differently. Then he started sending me to different companies to train their people. And at that time, he's like, you should quit. You should quit your school. Come do this full time. And, you know, we can make a lot of money together. And the guy used to have a Corvette. And he used to show me this Corvette. I'm like, look at me. I drive a Corvette. You can do this too. And, you know, like you're just showing the child at the time that's not really developed yet, right? All these big things. You're like, okay, wow, yeah. My parents don't have a Corvette. Yeah, I can do this. And I go, I'm like, Mom, I'm going to quit school. Made me quit the company. And then they call the guy. They're like, this is what you're teaching my child? He's going to be a vacuum salesman? Oh, and wow. I remember that call vividly. And I was so embarrassed. I never went back to the company again.
Like, what was the time in your life now, you know, in the last, you know, many years, where your parents said that this can actually work? Like, it was working, but what was that, you know, moment when?
So that's another story. I'm just going to go over it briefly. I'm in university, third year. I got my real estate license. And I got my real estate license because the people that my parents were buying houses through at the time, if they're watching this, they're going to know exactly who they are. Mm-hmm. But this is no shot at them. But, you know, if the right person's watching, they would know. They were selling my parents' properties that didn't really fit the bill for what they needed at the time, just for a commission check. And that's when I realized, because being around, and they're family members, and going through, this is why they say sales is a shady business, because people do it for their personal interest and not for the interest of the client that you're actually supposed to be looking at. And that's when I made the connect. I'm like, if this person is doing real estate, and I'm giving too much information, but he was an engineer making really good money, and sales was, real estate was just a part-time profession, but we trusted him just because, you know, family member, why would he do us any harm?
Right.
But my parents were, you know, not looking at it through the right lens. And that family member used to come to me and be like, hey, listen, I would give you this much on the side. Like, I'll buy you Xbox. I'll buy you this. Try to bribe you. Like, just get them to buy this house. I was like, hell to the no. I'd bring my parents back to the side of like, this is what he said about this house. My parents were like, there's no way. They still bought the house anyways. And then from that way, I was like, this got to change. You know, because my parents are being taken advantage of at this point. And then I started getting my real estate license. Got in the process of acquiring the license over a 6-month period at the time. After I got my license, I got into sales right away. And then from that point on, my life changed completely. And my first year in real estate business, I did like $250,000 in total commissions.
Wow.
And that was like, my parents didn't really know what I was doing at the time, because, you know, I didn't want to tell them that I was a realtor. And they hired a PI, a private investigator.
No.
Oh, yeah. They hired a PI, and that PI used to come to my university and just kind of watch me, right? Like, what is he doing? How is he making all this money? How is he buying this car? How is he, I just stopped going to school at the point. I didn't care about school because I was like, this is irrelevant. Third year making $250,000. And I'm like, okay, I don't need this formal education, because whatever I'm going to take from the education is going to be a lot less than the person that I'm learning from. The professors are making less than 200K.
Yeah.
I'm making 250K in my third year. Makes sense. And that's where the disconnect happened. I was like, okay. So my parents thought I was selling drugs or something. And they're like, but the way that I've been raised, you know, the values and ethics, I always had a big shoe to fill. And I wanted to prove something to them that there's other ways of doing it. And then my first award ceremony, I sent a card on that PI's windshield and I put it there. And that PI goes home and he's like, your son's a realtor and a really successful one at that. This is the award ceremony. I think you guys should attend. they attended the award ceremony and they were all in tears. My family was there and I went on the award, got the best award in the brokerage at the time. And for a rookie agent, you know, doing $250,000 was a lot of money at the time, especially that long ago, because home prices were not that expensive like they are now. And to make $250,000 now is a lot easier because values are triple from what I was selling them at before, right? And it wasn't that glorified of a profession. There wasn't a lot of things you can learn online. Like, we're sharing free knowledge right now, right? So it wasn't there. Like, the YouTube, you had like some people doing it, not a lot of people doing it. I wasn't on it for sure.
You had to hustle, right?
Had like, to hustle.
You still have to hustle, but you know, the hustle was very different. You know, you have to door knock for knowledge.
Anything and everything to succeed. There was nothing that came off the table. And that's something that a lot of realtors were really lazy. Right when you come into this profession, you realize you can blow this thing out of the park. If you have work ethic that can... if you can just outwork your competition, you're going to win. There's literally no other thing that you need. You don't need any special powers. You will learn through the process and you will adjust and deviate and make the right moves accordingly. But you have to outwork your competition. Put yourself in that position.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I did. I just outworked them. That's all.
That's so important. You know, this actually reminds me, someone asked me, so I'm a researcher. From my background, right? So someone asked me that, you know, how did you research about, you know, this property that you bought? How did you research? And I was like, you know, no one goes to 17th page of Google. I do, right? So I just out-research everyone else. I am not a better researcher. I just research more.
You're more curious.
Yeah, so I'm just more curious. I'm just, you know, talking to people. If I want to buy a pre-construction, if I'm, you know, like speculating and everything, I'll just go to a development that the builder built and someone is gardening and I just ask them, how is the construction quality? It's just a drive, 20 minutes, right? So I think it's so important, so critical. So then I hear the story that you retired your parents, you know, you bought them a house. So walk me through that, you know, how proud are they today?
The most rewarding thing in my life that I've ever done was by far that, just because, you know, without my parents, I'm nothing. Like, without the values that they instilled in me, the belief system. When I was growing up, my parents used to tell me, like, you're royal blood. And that kind of confidence goes a long way, because I used to legit think my dad was some sort of king. Like, I swear to God, when I was growing up, like, my dad's a king, because the hospital that he ran, he had a huge operation. He had a lot of people working for him. He served the community in more ways than you can imagine. And, he had a hospital in Raya. Raya is not too far from Amritsar. And I remember he used to go there every day, and he used to have like a 250 hospital bed, bed hospital. And he used to do a lot of free camps in Russia, free camps for eye surgeries and stuff. He used to do eye surgeries like throughout Canada, America, you name it, he's been there. And, you know, growing up, I used to be like, okay, I want to be like my father. I want to make my dad proud, right? Because if he's a king, I want to be the next king. I want to be worthy of being that king. And my mom used to tell me, like, as a child growing up, and I'm like six, 7 years old, and you're believing everything your mom tells you, like, we're royal. This is the royal family and you're the prince. So whatever you learn from now on, you have to think differently. You have to behave differently, and you have to have a belief system that nobody else does. And that belief system that they instilled in me as a child really helped me growing up, right? Because you, like, that's like a superpower, like the confidence that you build. And when they came to Canada, all that just went away, because now you're older. Now you realize, okay, you know, like, they built this life for themselves, right? They didn't take no handouts. And they sacrificed everything to come here for you. And I have two sisters. So women in India are not treated equally as men. It's just a fact. And that's just the way it is. And my mom wanted a better life for my two sisters. And, you know, me as a third child, obviously I was later down in the priority list, but they were the first priority, right? And I love my mom for that, because, you know, she had a cause and she uprooted her entire life with my father, and they came to this country just so women can have a better stand at having the life that they never had, that mom never had growing up. So that was her cause. We came to Canada. My sisters are extremely well. They're independent. They're successful. They're happy, right? They have more rights and freedom now than they ever did in India. And in doing that, you know, they sacrificed everything. And that sacrifice was the biggest thing that I saw, how to be selfless and how to do it for your kids. I don't know if I could do this for my kids. Honestly, if I had kids, I don't know if I could, right? To tell me to uproot everything and go to a different country and start all over again from scratch and give it all away and work 4 jobs as in factory jobs, this job, that job, after you're a medical professional who's respected highly in Punjab, highly in India, right? And to do all that, to sacrifice that, you really have to be really strong individual and have to have a really strong purpose. So they did that for us. My, you know, luckily, knock on wood, everything worked out. And, you know, sales gave me the life that I could give back to them. And I bought them their first property as a gift. This was a property we bought in Brampton. Later on in my sales career, when I saved up a little bit of money, I bought them like a magnificent over 6,000 square foot home, 3-car garage, corner lot. I used to work with the developer. And the way I built this house, everything custom to the nines. And I was like, you guys are back to where you guys were back home. Here you go. You know, and they were, they're the most proudest parents possible. They're super proud of everything I've accomplished. Now they're totally different than they were before. They've grown so much through this process. And now my dad even does real estate
with me.
Yeah, he got his real estate license. He doesn't do much real estate, but he's with me, you know, and I take him to all these houses. Like tomorrow, we're actually going to look at a $3 million house in Windsor on the waterfront just to go look at it, right? Mm. And I'm doing that with my father. So like we go property hunting. We talk about properties on the dinner table, like, nice. You know, like, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. My mom's always into it, you know, and she's like, yeah, bani ke upar ghar lena hai. Now that's the next thing I'm looking for.
Nice.
So I'm just trying to find the right property, right? Like, but that's the beauty of sales. It's like, it gave me the life that I could do this for my parents, right? Mm. And after I did that, and now I'm finally living my life because I wanted to make sure that I could get back to them and to do everything that they've done for us and sacrificed for us to make sure they're retired, they're taken care of. They don't ever have to work a day in their life ever again. That's their life now. Now just enjoy, have fun, do whatever you want, go wherever you want. So, you know,
that's amazing.
Yeah. It's fulfilling. The most rewarding feeling of all time by far. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And Armand, you know, like taking a leaf from, like your parents had a purpose, right? When they were coming, they wanted a better life for you. They built a better life for you. You had a purpose that you need to, you know, give them back, retire them, you know, what they always wanted, the same life. Like, but you still have 50 years in you. Like, what's next? Like, how do you find that purpose again? Or do you have a bigger purpose?
I do, yeah. Legacy. Okay. That's the next purpose, is to give it forward. I'm not going to be the last generation. I'm going to have kids one day. And I want my kids to be taken care of. And I want to be that staple in our family to literally set up our generations. And that's my biggest purpose right now. And to have a legacy that can be left behind, that I want to impact the world in a way which is going to be remembered. And I want to be remembered for something positive. So, you know, I'm trying to change lives. I change lives every single day. Help people achieve financial freedom. If I can do it, so can you. There's literally just this mind shift and just thinking a different way. That's all it is. If you just think from a different perspective, everything can change in your life. And how to transition that mind shift is literally what I do. I'm not a real estate
agent. What's that mind shift? Like,
you have to believe, number one, right? And you have to believe it's possible. But the mind shift has to change from, no matter where you are in life today, you can be in a completely different space 5 to 10 years from now. And people they literally overestimate what they can do in a year and they underestimate what they can do in 10 years. And that 10-year process is not that long. It's not that long. It's going to happen anyways. But just plant the right seeds in your mind and start training yourself to think differently about situations, about people, about money, about finance. Once you adapt that, everything can transform in your life. But you have to have a mindset of gratitude. You have to have things that, you know, if you're in a system that you're in right now and you have people around you that are all negative, get out of that. Get rid of that. And try to identify that this is negative. That's the number one step. It's figuring, is this negative or positive? If you can't identify that, then you're way back in the process. I mean, you got to start even earlier. But figure that out. Change your circle of who you hang around with. Try to get into the right rooms with the right people. And
what if someone who's negative is family? What do you do then?
Family is something that we didn't have a choice when we were growing up. This is something that we got put into that, right? They're blood, just chosen for us. We didn't make those decisions. Whether you're family or not, I have the same principle across the board for everybody. If you're a negative person, whether you're family or a friend, I'm not going to be associating myself with you. And that's when you have to differentiate that and say, this is where my life is going to change. I don't want to be around this person anymore. I have to think differently. I have to be different because I don't want to live the life that they're living. I want to live the life that I thought about I want to live. Mm. But I have to go try to chase that. And if they think that's not possible, and you think you kind of believe it in yourself that it is, and that person doesn't, you'll never do it. Because you're around this person who thinks that, okay, this is not possible. So you start becoming the product of your environment and you start believing that person. Yeah, maybe what if he's right? Yeah, it's not possible, right? And you let go of your entire childhood, your entire life. Now you're 50, 60 years old and you're looking back at life and you're like, man, if I did some things differently at the time, now you have regret.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want regret.
You know, so, you know, that's my biggest fear. Like when I was leaving my job, you know, doing the mortgage thing, I've left my job earlier as well, you know, yeah. because I always thought that if I work for myself, I'll mm-hmm. probably do better. It didn't work out the first couple of times, but now it's kind of is. So I look at it like this. I have two decisions. Mm. I can stay in my 9-to-5 and, you know, like be happy with what I have. And 30 years from now, I have a regret that, oh, what if I could have tried, right? And then I leave my 9-to-5 and then I fail in a business and then I have a regret. Like that's 2 years down the line. I still have 28 years to make amends, right? I go back to the job, right? Which is the bigger regret? Like that's my decision. You know, that's my decision making.
100%.
You know, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
Let's go back to vacuums. Sure. I'm going to go
interesting back part of my life. Yeah.
So you said that you got 10 people together.
Yeah.
And yeah. none of them sold, you know, a single vacuum. Now you just mentioned very briefly that you are not a realtor. Like, what is it that makes you different?
My approach to real estate is to help for your cause first. Like I actually build people's portfolios at this time now. Mm. I don't sell properties. That's why I left the pre-construction game. I like pre-construction. I just didn't enjoy it as much because you're just selling blueprints for houses that don't make any sense. Because I lived in the city my entire life, right? Moving to Windsor is something that's new for me. The people that came into the vacuum sales thing, just hovering over that a little bit, those 10 people are still my closest friends, majority of them. I still know them. But their mindset, when they were trying to sell these vacuums, they thought it was so impossible to sell that they did not actually sell anything. And once they didn't sell, and I started looking at them, and I'm like, man, if they didn't sell, how am I able to do this? The next showing that I did, and that was the first showing that I did not sell that vacuum, and over like a couple months period, after they came in, everything changed for me. Because remember I was telling you, if you're surrounding yourself with people that cannot believe it, you'll become the byproduct of that. I started believing things differently. I'm like, maybe I'm just getting lucky. Once I had that thought, that first showing, I went there, I didn't sell that vacuum. 4-hour presentation, didn't sell. And I was like, whoa. And the guy's like, yo, I don't want to buy. And he had all the money in the world. Like I was a really successful person, but just, I don't want to buy. I'm not convinced. And I'm like, whoa. I went in with a different mindset today than I did the other couple months. I went there with the mindset of, okay, I can do this. I will do this. That showing, I went in with, maybe I just got lucky.
Hmm.
And that's the shift for me. I was like, okay, God damn, I got to separate myself. They all quit and I quit. I'm like, I can't do this no more. But going back into real estate, a lot of realtors do this for, you know, personal gain. And I think real estate's looked at as like a get rich quick scheme. It's really not. It's people don't understand how hard this business is. It's not something where you can just get your real estate license and just get in and make $1 million and your life is all glamorous like you see on Selling Sunset. That's not how this thing works. You have to put in the work. You have to have a purpose and you have to be better than the other people that you're working around, right? Because there's so many realtors, over 50,000 realtors. Why are only 1% of them making over $50,000? And $50,000 is like, you can make that anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? So I build people's portfolios based on the principles that are going to benefit them to get them to the financial freedom level. A lot of families followed me from Toronto to come to Windsor. We moved a lot of families here in the last 24 months.
Mm.
And the reason why they did that is because they've seen how my pre-construction to multifamily switch changed my life, and they're doing the same thing. So they're getting passive income properties. I'm building portfolios for them, and they don't have the education of what to buy, when to buy, how to buy. I teach them that, but for me to sell a property there to that client that's loyal to me, I could sell that for $650,000 for a condo, and average price there is $1 million for any detached home. So my interest a lot of realtors would never take their client to a smaller city and say, come buy a $400,000 property, because they're making less. This is 1/3 or 1/4 of the price of what I can sell something for in Toronto, right?
I think it's the same thing, right? You mentioned that a lot of people think about 1 year, mm-hmm. not in 10 years, mm-hmm. right? So you're thinking of a portfolio of $4 million.
Yeah.
You know, people are thinking about $1 million one-time purchase.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. And you have to think of it as your money will work harder than you always. It's just how you accumulate it and plant the right seeds. So if they're buying something there for $1 million right now, and this is their first purchase or second purchase, they're going to get stuck for a while until they get out of that and buy stuff outside, right? If you bought 3 properties in Windsor for $400,000 a piece, you're at $1.2 million, but each one of those properties, even with today's interest rates, will cash flow you and they'll pay itself off.
But why don't people think like that?
Because they're scared to take the risk. They're scared to go outside the boundaries.
But they're buying a $1 million, or $700,000 condo, which is negative $1,000 cash flow just because it's close to them. But like, what stops them from, you know, everyone knows now it's, you know, there, you know, people are making videos on Windsor, you know, US, like, why?
I think majority of it is, you know, it's cool to do what the other people are doing around you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people fall into that trap of, my uncle did this, my cousin did this, my friends are doing this. Monkey see, monkey do, right? And that's what a lot of pre-con is. And a lot of people that bought in the peak of the market, right? People lining up outside the presentation center for hours. They have no idea who the builder is, what the project is, what they're buying, what the prices are, until they get inside the door. And that's what's the most alarming thing to me. You're willing to sign your life away on something that just because someone else is doing it? Mm. How do you know that person's making the right decision and not following somebody else? So they fall into that trap. But you know, once you come to that realization of numbers don't lie, numbers have to make sense. Mm. If numbers make sense, do the deal. I don't even look at the deal objectively just as a house anymore. I look at the numbers first.
Oh yeah, makes sense.
If the numbers make sense, then I look at the house and I'm like, okay, you know.
We bought the Ohio one, right?
Yeah.
I saw that 3 months after we bought it.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
See? Right? No, that's...
Inspection report makes sense. Numbers make sense. You know, like the story makes sense. Buy it.
That's something that I want to touch on real quick, because you live where?
Yeah, Kitchener.
Kitchener. You bought in?
Ohio.
Why?
Numbers made sense.
It's a better investment, much cheaper, giving you higher returns, and you never seen the property for 3 months.
Yeah.
Why do you need to? If the numbers make sense, you've seen the videos, you've seen the inspection report, have the trust to take the risk. You have to take the risk. And that risk, that is the biggest difference in mind shift that you've adapted now, that you're going to be doing, taking this on for the next property, for the next property, for the next property. You don't have to be tied down to your physical location. Right? Your mind can be still somewhere else. Physically, you might be here, but you should think outside the box. Mm. Think in different areas. Think in different regions, different countries, right? So chase wherever we can get the highest return, ROI, that's where you got to go. But it's a mental shift.
All right. So this section, I'm still trying to name it, but let's call it the Rapid Four, where I'll, you know, just quick answers here. Sure. So the best advice that you ever got from someone, and who was it?
If it costs you your piece, it's too expensive. And that's for my mother.
Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah.
What's the worst advice that you got? I'll not ask from whom, but yeah. What's the worst advice that you got?
Be realistic. It's impossible.
Hmm.
And that itself, if you tell me I can't do something, I'm going to figure out a way to prove you wrong. So
and that,
everything is possible.
That is, in fact, true for a lot of people. Like, they just need to be told you can't do it, and then they're like, they'll find a way to do it.
The word impossible itself has two meanings. It has I am possible. You just have to look at it differently.
What's that one rule that you think that, like, it should be a rule, like it should be followed by everyone?
There's a few things I can say for this one, but one thing particularly that I would say is, don't let the kid inside you die. Keep those dreams alive. Dream bigger and aim for every single thing that you wanted to do. Make it happen. You have one life. Go for it. Just go for it. Last just like the Nike symbol. Just do it.
Yeah, just
go
it. For it. Last one. If you were to take someone out for lunch or dinner, dead or alive, doesn't matter.
Wow.
Who would that person be?
I don't want to